Hey again, everyone. Welcome to BitNote with David Collins. We'll be talking about video game music and video games and playing the music from the games themselves. This episode, it's time for Donkey Kong. And a brief reminder, you can get podcasts of these episodes on the DublinSouthFM.ie website. Now, time for the first track. Now, trust me when I say there is a lot more to this track, the game behind it, and the game series behind it than you can possibly imagine. There's a whole story here and there, but let's just start off with the simple track. So what game was that from? It was Donkey Kong Country for the Super Nintendo. It was developed by Rare, and the music you just heard was the DK Island Swing, which was composed by David Wise. Now, I said that there was a long history behind this, so let's start at the beginning. Donkey Kong Country may have been released in the mid-90s, but the very first Donkey Kong game was actually in the early 80s. You see, around this time there was a company called Nintendo, which you may have heard of. Now, Nintendo in the early 80s had been formed nearly 100 years beforehand, back in 1889. And their entire focus had basically been as a card game company. That's what they focused on. However, they've operated like that for many decades, but then by around the 1950s, they decided to branch out into different avenues, different businesses, and video games became something that they were trying to get involved in. In the early 80s, they were trying to crack the arcade game market, and specifically the American arcade game market, where there was a lot of business. They made a few games along with a lot of other devices, but one thing they were trying to hope that would do well was a game called Radar Scope, an arcade game that was a mix and a mix between a couple of games, probably a bit of Space Invaders and some others. So it was, you've got this sci-fi kind of shooter game going, and that was what they really hoped would sell. It became very popular in Japan, but barely popular at all in America, which was a problem because they had now a huge amount of arcade cabinets that were completely unsold. So what they needed to do was basically repurpose them. So essentially, they gave the task to a recently recruited student graduate called Shigeru Miyamoto. And if you know that name, he would go on to become one of the epic bases in video game history. But back then, he was just a student who was given a small, simple task. Well, maybe not that simple. Instead of just going for a specific gameplay and just developing it like that, he was took one of the earliest approaches of actually coming up with the concept beforehand. He actually tried to develop the characters. You know, he was inspired a lot by manga, you know, Japanese illustration. So with stuff like that, you're dealing with characters and styles and genres before you deal with the actual mechanics. So with video game, he was actually going at it in sort of the opposite direction that most were going. Of course, since then, it's become very popular in video games to come up with the concept first and work out how the actual gameplay works later. But essentially, he developed a kind of a love triangle between a carpenter, his girlfriend, and a gigantic Bluto-like character. Something a little like Popeye actually was one of his inspirations. You know, he had Popeye the hero and his girlfriend and, of course, Bluto. So he had the concept and they developed it, and he worked with a bunch of programmers to try to figure out the right gameplay mechanics. And in the end, he decided that the angry person that would be that would actually desire the heart of the protagonist's girlfriend would be a gigantic monkey. And after a lot of gameplay designs, it was decided that what would happen was that the monkey would hold the girlfriend hostage and you as the protagonist needed to rescue it. Very simple concept. The first level of this game, there were basically four levels which repeated themselves, was essentially there was a set of stories of a building that was still under construction. You would have to walk up each side of the... Each of the levels was slightly sloped in the opposite direction, so you had to go up the slopes, try to climb ladders, get to the very top where you can rescue your girlfriend. And meanwhile, the monkey was like throwing these huge rolling barrels that would fly, start to roll down one side of the screen, roll down the other. So you basically had to jump over these items and climb up ladders and jump over barrels and try to get to the top. And then, of course, the other levels made it more complex. There were things flying all over the place. You had to jump from one platform to the other, and you had to, you know, go up. You often had to open up these holes in the ground and then jump over the holes and stuff. And if this sounds like a platforming game, you know, like a game where a standard 2D platform game, well, that's because it is, but this was literally the first platforming game. I mean, there were things slightly like it, but this is the first game where you were controlling a character that walked around in two-dimensional, jumped from platform to platform, had to jump over obstacles. And essentially, this was the first game that ever did it. Shigeru Miyamoto basically invented platforming genre, which has become one of the most mainstays of the entire, one of the mainstay genres of the entire computer game genre. I mean, even these days, platforming games are still being made in high demand. There are a lot of 3D platformer games, but even 2D ones, just like this game, were created. So they called the game Donkey Kong because there was Kong, you know, King Kong, and there was also the monkey in it. But there's this rumor that it was actually a fax machine error that they were saying like Monkey Kong, but it became Donkey Kong because they couldn't read it properly. But the truth is, it was just Donkey because it was meant to be stubborn. So, you know, the characteristics of this great monkey being stubborn like a donkey. This game went out and they sent it to the United States of America and to the Nintendo department there. And essentially, there were one or two problems. They wanted to localize the game. Localizing is a huge aspect of video game. It just basically means changing a game to be more appealing to the local audience. Now, while that sounds on the face of it decent, it can lead to so many problems, especially the fact that the people localizing it might have a worse idea about what customers are looking for than the people who actually made the game. It's a whole area that you can spend so much time in. But for a start, they didn't think it would be very good. They thought it was like maze games or shoot 'em ups or anything. It wasn't like the ones that were popular at the time. That's got to be the most biggest innovation blockage to innovation and exciting new things. People think something's not going to be good because it's not like something that's already popular. So Donkey Kong was no exception. They asked to change the title, they wouldn't agree. So they actually tried to change the names of the characters. So there was basically Jumpman was the main protagonist. He was a small carpenter guy. He was given, they couldn't make draw the mouth on him properly, so they just gave him a mustache. And because of this limitations with their drawing everything, they just gave him a pair of dungarees, which worked out pretty well, you know, because you're talking, they have to basically put a bunch of very small squares together to make up this character, and they don't have much detail, so they had to make very simplistic character designs back then. So they threw out the name Jumpman, and they basically, Nintendo of America, named it after their landlord. Their landlord had basically visited the premise to ask for rent. They said, we'll pay up, promise the money's coming. The landlord had left. So they said, okay, well, let's name Jumpman after our landlord. And so that's great. That's what they did. Their landlord's name was Mario Sergal. So the character was called Mario. That's right. That is how Mario was created. Shigeru Miyamoto created Mario, the eponymous Mario of Super Mario Brothers, of pretty much countless games with the word Mario in the title. That was how he was created. Originally Jumpman and named after some landlord in America. And so, needless to say, Donkey Kong became a massive hit. The gameplay mechanics, the fact there was a nice little plot and animated sequence, you know, with you rescuing your girlfriend and going through the levels until you rescued her. And it's just, that's how it started. That's how Shigeru Miyamoto invented Mario. He invented the first real platform game. And this huge success of the Nintendo, of the Donkey Kong arcade cabinet, meant, first of all, things went really well for Nintendo. It was to create an enduring legacy and a key part of video game history. And Shigeru Miyamoto was well on his way to become the creator of such great computer games such as Zelda, F-Zero, Star Fox, and of course, which he'd already done at this stage, the entire Mario franchise. So, a key game person in all of game history. That's how he got his start, and that's how Nintendo started to gain strength and would later end up becoming one of the greatest players in the video game industry. Of course, all this happened long before Donkey Kong Country was actually made, which was, like I said, in the 90s. So why don't I just throw in the main theme tune of that game, and we'll get back to talking about how it came to be. Okay, that was the main theme of Donkey Kong Country, once again composed by David Wise and from Donkey Kong Country, which was developed by Rare. So, where we last left our heroes of the story, Shigeru Miyamoto had invented platforming, created Mario, and helped steer Nintendo towards its great fortunes in the video game history by helping them create a hugely successful arcade game called Donkey Kong. But it did not end there, my friend. You see, in case you haven't noticed, there's a bit of inspiration in Donkey Kong from a certain 1993 Hollywood movie, King Kong. There's not only in the name, but also in the fact you've got a gigantic ape kidnapping a woman, bringing her to the top of the building and needing to be rescued. You could see it as a homage or inspiration, but unfortunately Universal Studios didn't quite see it under either of those terms. You can see where this goes next. Huge amounts of legal action, both about Nintendo and various licensees it had. basically anyone who was trying to be involved with the Donkey Kong video game were thrown under legal action. Universal was a gigantic movie company, and all these small companies that were just in the fledgling video game industry suddenly found themselves put under huge legal pressure and not quite sure what to do. Many of them settled or capitulated, but Nintendo, God bless them, they went for the fight. They challenged Universal. And in the court case of Universal City Studios Incorporated versus Nintendo Co. Limited, they fought their position. And Nintendo's lawyer, John Kirby, basically pushed the case that Nintendo weren't infringing on their properties. He managed to find something to their favor, that King Kong was essentially argued to be under public domain. And critically, Universal Studios, in a previous court case, had argued that King Kong was under public domain. So here was this movie studio that in a previous thing basically said that King Kong was free for anyone to use, now arguing that someone using it was infringing their rights. To put a long story short, Nintendo won. They managed to win and got damages and everything. It was a huge success, and it showed that this small company could take on the big leagues when it came to the entertainment. What's more, if Universal had won, who knows what would have happened? Nintendo could have easily gone bankrupt or being seriously legally damaged or being way too conservative. Anything could have happened. But they won, and they were hugely happy with John Kirby. They basically gave him a $30,000 sailboat named the Donkey Kong, and also gave him exclusive worldwide rights to use the name for sailboats. What's more, his inspiration may go on further than that. You may recall a very other famous Nintendo property and video game character, Kirby. Now, no one actually knows for certain whether that character of Kirby was named after John Kirby or not. Even the original creator doesn't remember how he came up with the name of Kirby. But the huge Kirby is a key Nintendo franchise, and it's quite possible that the titular hero gets its name from that great Nintendo legal defender who scored a victory for Nintendo when it needed it the most. It's funny, Donkey Kong creates the name for one of Nintendo's most popular characters, Mario, and then a court case from it possibly gives rise to the naming of another key Nintendo character. But that's how these things are intertwined in both in life and in the video game industry. Let's move on to our next song, and then maybe I'll start talking about the video game that these songs are actually from. And that was Simeon Sieg, also from Donkey Kong Country by Rare. But actually, it was Evelyn Fisher who composed that tune, not David Wise, on this occasion. So I talk a lot about how Rare made Donkey Kong Country, but what is Rare's deal? They are a video game company, a British video game company, formed in the mid-80s that developed a lot of successful titles early on, including Battletoads for the Super Nintendo. And then when they're 1994, Nintendo bought 49% of the company and they became what's known as a second-party developer. Now, what does second-party mean? Well, in the video game industry, you've got first-party games and first-party developer, where, for instance, if Nintendo is a Nintendo console, then Nintendo makes games for it. Nintendo is a first-party developer. Then you've got third-party developers like, say, Valve or Blizzard or whoever, who are basically, or Activision or EA, pretty much most game developers are third-party. That means they develop games and put it for any platform that they wish. But with a second-party developer, they're an independent company, usually, and yet they're developing games for a single platform. And when Nintendo bought a share out of Rare, that's what Rare became. They made games pretty much exclusively for Nintendo. They created some of Nintendo's greatest hits, such as GoldenEye for the Nintendo 64, and, of course, Perfect Dark as well. They created Banjo-Kazooie and Killer Instinct, and, of course, cult favourite Conker's Bad Fur Day, and, of course, Donkey Kong Country. Then in 2002, they were bought out by Microsoft, who wanted more games for their then-fledging Xbox. And Rare went on and produced utterly terrible games from that day forth. Okay, I'm being hugely unfair, but seriously, nothing they produced after they were acquired by Microsoft ever held a candle to stuff that they produced beforehand. Now, whether this was because the company changed and Microsoft bought them at the bad time, just like sometimes people buy a transfer in sports and they turn out to be very bad, or whether then it was something that Microsoft actively did that ruined the company, which happens with a lot of times when an independent game developer is acquired, no one can say, but that's what happened. So back when they were second-party developers of Nintendo, they created Donkey Kong Country, based on the Donkey Kong franchise. It was a completely new take. You basically play as Donkey Kong in a platform game, or I think maybe Donkey Kong's son. I never quite figured that part out. And you've got your nephew, Diddy Kong, to assist you. You see, your gigantic hoard of bananas has been stolen. If you go into the cave to your banana hoard, you can see it at the beginning of the game and your despair expression. And so the game is about you going through all these gorgeous levels, defeating enemies to try to take back your bananas that have been taken from you. The game took advantage of what was very new technology at the time, pre-rendered graphics. This was when you created a computer that would create these really detailed 3D models, then basically take a photograph of the models and put them in the two-dimensional video game. Rare was one of the earliest people to ever do a technique like that. In fact, it was their investment in this sort of stuff and showing it off to Nintendo that actually got them to become partially acquired by Nintendo and a second-party developer. They even had studied actual monkeys shambling around the place to get the animation right. And essentially, you've got a great big fun adventure. You're going through the monkeys, you've got these freezing levels, and you've got minecart levels, and you've got these barrels that will shoot you into the sky, and you've got underwater levels, and you've even got all these various upgrades where you can, if you're underwater, you can catch a ride on this swordfish, or if you're on the ground, you can sometimes catch a ride on this great big ostrich. It was such a hyped game at the time. So much attention was put onto it. And it really was, back then, it was really just to show off how powerful the Super Nintendo was, again, back then. Certainly trying to show off the console's powers is a theme that's gone on many times in the past, video games. Not so much these days, but that's really a story for another day. The game also had a bit of a sense of humor as well. For instance, you got this grandfather-esque character who I think is your dad, and he talks about how, you know, kids these days have it so young. You know, there are more colors used in a single banana today than there were used in the entire game back in my day, and stuff like that. And it's just, even at the beginning, that there's this joke with the older granddad, you know, using this crank gramophone, and then suddenly in comes the newer Donkey Kong using a big ghetto blaster and everything. I mean, you actually heard that happen when I was playing the theme tune earlier. The earlier part of the theme tune was like the classic tune of Donkey Kong, which, you know, was shown on screen as being played on a wind-up gramophone, and then suddenly in comes the new Donkey Kong with the ghetto blaster and showing the more updated version of that theme. The original Donkey Kong theme was composed by Yukio Kenioka. So it was just fun, it was beautifully rendered, sense of humor, and also just a lot of bonus stages, a lot of interesting enemies. It was Rare basically reimagining how Donkey Kong worked, and obviously this game would go on to have sequels. I showed you, played you already some music from Donkey Kong 64, that infamous rap where they introduce a whole new characters, and that was its first big adventure in 3D. But before then, there were a couple of other 2D games, and of course after Rare were acquired, any further development on the franchise had to be done by a different developer. But, you know, when you look back on everything, I mean, I really enjoyed Donkey Kong Country when it came out. It was fun. It was like an example of what was pushing the game platform forward. I really liked the idea that it was, you know, Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong played at the same time, and if you could switch between the two of them mid-gameplay, and then if one got injured, he'd run off, and you'd have the other one just to walk around, and you had to find a barrel and break that open, and then the guy that ran off would come back, and then you could do it. But, of course, if you lost both of them, then it was, you know, you lost a life. I like mechanics like that. I like how you could switch between the two, but they both control differently. I liked all those barreled cannons that would shoot you off across the screen and spin you around. I like the graphics. I like some of the bonus stages, the collecting the bananas. It was all just a really fun and greatly well put together game, and it was just a great example of things of its time. The game also had a lot of secrets, which I really liked. I mean, back then, secrets in a video game were absolutely nothing common, but it's something that's a lot rarer these days. For instance, if you press down and I think hit a jump or attack, the monkey you would basically just hit the ground like it's a pair of bongos. And funny I mentioned bongos, that much later Donkey Kong would actually be in a bongo game that came with a bongo accessory, so you had to hit the bongos in time with all these instructions on the screen, kind of like Guitar Hero or something. Donkey Kong Country is probably where that idea slightly came from. But if you did it in the right place, suddenly a bunch of bananas would just jump out of the floor and you'd pick them up and try to restore your bananas. It was a game of a lot of nice touches, and as you can hear, it had a great soundtrack as well. So I hope you've enjoyed this little bit of video game history, and I hope that I haven't completely bored the pants off of you. I'll finish up by playing Aquatic Ambience, the music of the water level, also composed by David Weiss and from the same game and developers mentioned before. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening. ¶¶